everyone, and welcome to Minute 156 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Hugh Keen from the National Treasure Minute. Welcome to the show, Hugh.
Hi, how's it going?
It's doing great. Going great. Looking forward to having a fun week to talk about everything that happens in The Great Escape. At least these minutes.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Right, so...
Not the most dialogue heavy minutes here.
It depends on what language you speak.
That's true. Mostly just action.
Yeah.
Which is great, I guess.
Yep.
I'm personally a big dialogue fan. I like analyzing dialogue, but
these are the randomly chosen episodes.
That's
for
okay. I think these minutes, like, I think the whole movie's just shot really well. In terms of framing and stuff. And so this is a great example of that.
Exactly. So minute 156 begins with the second waiter and Cedric peeking out from their hiding place and goes all the way till the Gestapo man introduces himself to Roger. As we were discussing yesterday, there was the whole scene where Cedric was hiding behind a newspaper in a little cafe supposedly in France, even though it was filmed in Germany, in Fussen.
Yes, okay.
At this point, the waiter decides to bring him to behind the bar in order to save him because something's about to happen to the three German officers who showed up in the cafe and were drinking. A car comes by and shoots the three of them. And on Friday, we discussed the fact of how the stuntman did a very nice job of going in completely different directions after getting shot.
Oh,
he had one go to the right, one go to the left, and one do a backflip across the chairs behind him. So, that was a lot of fun. So, this minute begins right after that, where the first waiter stood up and to make sure the coast was clear. And then in this one, you have the second waiter and Cedric pop their heads up in order to see that everything is finally over and that they're safe.
Yep.
After they do so, the first waiter goes and takes a bottle of something from behind him. And the second waiter takes out two glasses and the two of them drink up to the fact that they've just had a hand in murdering three SS officers. I find that very interesting that they don't even offer Cedric one.
Okay. Yeah, I also wrote down my interaction to, like, their reaction to this, because I was like, I guess it makes sense in the middle of a war that they're that desensitized to people dying that they're actually celebrating. Like obviously it's a victory for the resistance, and it's against the enemy, but it's still sort of jarring to me that the very first thing they do is drink. Later on in this minute, we hear sirens,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just like, what happens? Like, they know somebody's going to come find these dead Germans, right?
Obviously.
And so there was no hiding of the celebration. Like, I guess what I'm saying is they just did it out on their counter. They were just very open with their celebrating of this. And from what the sounds in the background of the minute, it sounds like in a couple minutes, they're going to have to stash that stuff away pretty fast because somebody's going to be investigating this crime scene.
The question is how much is someone going to be investigating the crime scene in this little town? You know, is it something that everyone will be happy about the fact that these three Germans were shot? You know,
I guess that's true.
Maybe they were the highest ranking Germans in the area. So therefore, you know, anyway, who knows? It is possible that there will be some sort of investigation. You're right. I didn't even think about that aspect of the whole thing, but how they plan on getting out of it by saying, oh, we had nothing to do with it. We were just sitting here, drinking our wine and someone came out of nowhere and just shot them. Did you notice what type of car?
Yeah,
no, but... I was a little too drunk. Didn't notice. But I think it was a green car, or maybe it was a black car, even though I think it was gray. But
you're right. It is interesting that it would have, I don't know if it would have been a comedic touch, but it would have been interesting if he'd also offered one to Cedric.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, they did save Cedric. It wasn't as if they thought that he's someone who's connected to the enemy. They don't know who he is, and they don't really know what his background is and how he got to this particular place. But they don't have to say, okay, we're going to actually try and save him.
Yeah.
So if they're saving him, so why not give him a glass also? As you said, it's a little insensitive for them to do it this way.
It's, yeah, and it's also, like, they're assuming he's not affiliated with Germany at all.
Right.
I mean, they just, they went out of the way to save him, but there's always, I mean, there's a chance, I guess, there's loyalists in France, so.
Well, of course. I mean, I don't know. The whole Vichy it's government. Just, I mean.
Yeah, so it's just, like, it still is, it's just surprising to me. I mean, and maybe it's just for, like, movie theatrics, but I just, it doesn't seem real to me that they would immediately drink, especially with a stranger there. Like, but.
Well, apparently they think it is. So,
I mean, I'm not.
I mean, it's yeah. It's a nice touch. It is a nice touch. It's because I think it's something also that the audience wants
to see.
That's
true, yeah. You want to see the Germans know, get it.
We just, that's right. The three Germans just got shot, and therefore, cheers. Let's drink to that. You know, that type of thing. Which, obviously, there are different ways that you can look at it. I think it is part of also the comedic aspect of, or the comedic tone of the film to do it this way.
Yeah.
But again, when you're sitting and watching this minute by minute like we have, it really stands out, the fact that they don't even offer something like anything. You know, they don't really even pay attention to the fact that he's here, despite saving his life a few seconds ago.
That is true.
So, So at this point, Cedric then says to them, "Resistance," which is pretty funny, because who else would it be at this point if they've now just clinked glasses over the fact that they've killed three Germans? No, we're actually real. Yes. We're Germans. We're happy that we killed the Germans. I mean, what else could you be? You know, who else could it be? You know. Then he says it a second time, and at this point, the waiters get a little taken aback. They're not really sure if this is someone that they should trust or not. You know, when he says resistance a second time, the waiter actually looks a little scared. You know, whether it's scared that, okay, I'm now going to get caught, or, you know, what's going through his mind is maybe I shouldn't have saved this guy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Not really sure.
When I was watching it, it seems like the waiter closest to Sedgwick, he does a good job in this scene. But, like, the mustache waiter, the other one, he like, has no reaction to anything that happens in this scene. Whatsoever. He doesn't react really to what Sedgwick says at all. And he doesn't... And there's a time where the middle, the first waiter, like, after Sedgwick asks for assistance, he, like, looks over at the mustache guy to see, like, get some, I guess, affirmation from his friend. And there's nothing.
Right, but I think it could also be because maybe the second waiter doesn't understand what
I guess that's, English. That could be,
It could be. You know, the question is whether it's the actor who couldn't understand English or whether it's the character. You know, maybe they just got some local to play the character and just said, okay, just stand there and you don't have to say anything. All you have to do is every take that we make, you get to take a drink.
Okay, yeah.
Beyond that, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming it's just an extra, and they were like, hey, you need to be a waiter in this scene. But it was just funny because it was just funny because he was pretty plain throughout the whole thing. But
yeah, I mean, one of the things that I love about that I'm a little upset, actually, about in this movie is because at the time, people who had bit parts never got any credit. So we have no way of finding out who these two characters, actors are. Who play them. They're not listed, even on IMDb, they're not listed in any type of credit.
Interesting.
Which is a little disappointing, because it would have been nice to have actually seen that and get a little more information about it, about who they are. I guess that's what it is. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. All right, so at this point, Sedgwick responds, resistance. And then, obviously, because of his terrible Australian accent, his French accent isn't good at all, either. The waiter then says, you're English? Which is even funnier because, you know, he obviously hears him speak English, but to think that he's British goes to show that he has absolutely no idea about the accents. It would have been funny if he would have said, you're American? You're an American pretending to be an Australian? But no, he just asks if he's English. And then he gives a quick little explanation as to who he is. He says, I'm Australian. That's obviously debatable based on his accent. But... at this point, he begins to try speaking a little bit of French, which we can see the waiter himself notices the fact that Lee does not have any take on the language. And as soon as he begins speaking French, she quickly cuts him off and says, you can speak English? I completely understand what you're saying. And at this point, the mustache waiter then wipes his mouth.
Yes, yeah.
He picks up a rag or a dish towel and just wipes his... Getting ready for his next drink, I guess you can say. And at this point, he explains who he is. He says, Bloody good, I'm a British officer. I've just escaped from the POW camp in Germany. I'm trying to make my way to Spain. Do you understand me? His response is funny because he responds in French. Mm-hmm. He goes, oui. Instead of responding yes, which he told him that he understands what he's saying. And then he asks, can you help me? And at this point, this is where we hear the police siren, based on what you said. And you can see the reaction of the two waiters to hearing the police siren coming from the distance. Cedric is also taken aback by this point, because he looks around also very suspiciously. And then the waiter tells him that, I can't help you, but I do know someone who can. Bloody good response from,
yes,
from Cedric. And at this point, the waiter then takes him and, you know, tries to hide him in the back. You know, he grabs him by the arm and then pushes him back behind him. So, you know, it's nice the way this plays out. But it also makes you wonder, Cedric is really, he's very quickly being able to trust these people. Obviously, he sees that the Germans were shot, okay? Is he able to figure it out on his own that these two guys had a hand in the whole thing? Or is it something that they might have just been tipped off? It's possible that someone told him, okay, be careful, someone's coming to shoot the Germans. Or it could be the other way, that, okay, he's part of this plan to kill these three high-ranking Germans. It could be either, but Cedric doesn't know either of them. So it's pretty interesting the way that they play this out.
I didn't even think about that, about how quickly he trusts them. I guess you could potentially say he was so tired of trying to figure it out on his own at that point that he was like, I'm just going to need to, like, trust the first people I can. Like, maybe he was like, I'm having no luck getting out of here by myself. And so, or maybe he'd seen fellow prisoners get captured nearby or something.
Right. Okay. No, that's possible. I mean, I think part of it also has to do with the fact that we all know that Cedric is a loner, somewhat similar to Hiltz.
Yeah.
You know, Steve McQueen's character. All of the other characters, we see them pretty much, most of them, not all, most of the characters, we see them leave in groups of two, groups of three. You know, you have Henley and Blythe, who we saw Blythe get killed last week. Who else? We see Haynes and Nimmo are together when they're trying to...
Bartlett and his friends.
You know, we see, obviously... Bartler and we get Bartland and Mac, which we'll discuss a lot about.
Yeah.
Actually, even later this minute, we're going to talk about them. But most of this week is about the two of them. Actually, Pitt is on his own, but he's always keeping a safe distance, keeping an eye on other characters before he got shot. I think it was 2 weeks ago. So Cedric is on his own. You know, he's got his big trunk and he's taking his time getting across the country. I mean, if he is in France right now and he's Toulouse, France, I think that's where they mentioned that this is.
Yeah.
He got pretty far. I mean, think about it. He came from German-occupied Poland, went all the way through Germany, went all the way through France in order to get as close as possible to the Spanish border. This is a pretty... I mean, obviously, we know that he took a bike and then he took a train. But still, it was a long journey for him. Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder how many days have gone by since the escape itself. Because it can't be that many days. But it also can't be that too many people. It wasn't that they just got out yesterday. It must be at least 2-3 days.
I think when I was researching, they talked about the real Roger, like from real life. He made it like,
Roger.
He made it some Bouchelle. Insane distance in like just like 16 hours of getting out of the camp. I can't remember what the distance was, but it was something like hundreds of miles like away, and I was like, he made a lot of ground I obviously always knew more about the movie than I did about the real event, and I just always assumed they all got caught in like the town outside of the camp, Like, that's what it always felt like.
A lot of them did. A lot of them got caught very quickly because of the fact that the real escape took place on March 24th, and there was snow on the ground. And just a quick trivia tidbit that you probably don't know. Other people have heard me mention it beforehand. The actual escape took place on Steve McQueen's 14th birthday.
Really?
Yes. Oh. His birthday was... He was born on March 24th, and you know, he was born in 1930, and 1944 was when the escape actually happened. But there was snow on the ground, and the snow was one of the reasons why many of them got caught.
I see.
Partially because I guess it's harder to hide footprints when you're going through the snow.
Yeah.
And also it makes it more difficult to travel. You know, that's going to keep you from trekking along a lot quicker.
Yeah.
If depends on how deep the snow was. I couldn't tell you. But also it's possible that the trains weren't running properly because of the snow, or buses, or whatever it is that they were trying to do.
That's true.
So, yeah. I mean, the movie, they have them escape in August. So that makes it...
Yeah.
The weather is a little nicer here. Much nicer than it was in real life. So then we move along and we get to see a bus that you can clearly see that it's on its way to Zurich.
Yep.
Which is Switzerland, which obviously is a safe place to go. We see... Now, I found this very interesting. Looking at this very closely, you see five women standing to get onto this bus. And then you see in the distance, you see Roger and Max walking towards the bus. Right after that, and beyond that, we see two Gestapo men that are standing close to the door of the bus, checking passengers that are showing up in order to go in, or looking at them. At this point, we get a close-up of people getting on the bus, and one of the passengers getting on the bus is a man.
Okay.
So they didn't do a very good job of continuity here.
Why do you say that?
Well, because you have five women standing in line.
Oh, you mean shot, like between the cuts.
In the close-up.
I see.
Yeah, and then in the close-up shot, there's a man among them.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I noticed about this is if you like look in the bus as they're walking past it, there's not room. Like there's not going to be seats for Roger and Mac when they get on the bus.
I didn't even think about
that. At least it doesn't appear so to me, because there's still a line ahead of them, and all the windows on their side on the side of the bus they're walking on are full. Like those seats are full. And then it looks like
in the back there's some seats.
Okay.
It looks that way. I don't know.
Like the bus is super full to me, at least. And I was like, I don't even know if there was room on the bus, like when they were filming it. And they were just like, hey, just line up. But they didn't actually count the amount of people.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. When you look at the close up of the two of them standing in line, you're right. You can see that bus is really packed.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's still people getting on.
There's a lot of people getting on, but maybe they just pack them in, pack them in like sardines. Everyone wants to go to Switzerland,
Yeah.
And then I also noticed a few other discrepancies between the passengers that were standing in line in the long shot and the short shot. There's like a woman who has her head covered.
Okay.
And then in the close-up, you see another woman who doesn't have her hair covered.
Okay.
You know, she's not wearing something on her head. Again, they film these completely, I guess, on different days, and never paid attention to the fact that they do not have the same actors or the same extras that were used there. Then we get to see Roger and Mac walking somewhat casually towards the bus door. They are looking around a little too suspiciously. The two of them, look very nervous by the way that they're going. And then they actually get stopped by the Gestapo man who's standing at the front of the bus. He walks up to them. Again, I'm not going to make people have to sit through my rendition of German words. So basically, basically what he says is, he goes, "Secret State Police, I'd like to see your ID."
Okay.
It's interesting what he holds up. He doesn't hold up an identification that has his picture or anything like that. He holds up what looks like a coin.
Yeah. It was interesting to me how it wasn't very big. Whatever he holds up.
Yeah, I wonder if the coin itself has some sort of significance to it. You know, is there something written on the coin that would identify who he is? Is the coin like a specific Gestapo Reich coin that only Gestapo men could have? I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, no clue. And that's pretty much how the minute ends. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
Yeah, I have a couple things. These are both sort of quick history or just factual bits. Mm-hmm. But I looked up both the posters that were in the bar on the wall.
Ooh, okay.
And one said apricot balls mm-hmm. on it, B-O-L-S. And from what I've found, I'm not an expert on alcohol, so what I found online was balls is the brand and apricot's the flavor, and it's an apricot brandy.
Oh, wow.
Which was originated in the Netherlands. And dates back to the 19th century. And then the other one called, it was spelled B-Y-R-R-H.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely no clue.
So, I think it said it was somewhat popular in the U.S. because it sounded like beer, like the name sounded like beer.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's like a, I don't know. Anyway, it's a French, originally a French alcoholic beverage. Which was created in 1866, and it was sold in the U.S. until Prohibition, and then they didn't sell it in the U.S. until 2012.
So, is there a reason for that?
I didn't look deep enough, so I don't know. But
wow, no, but that is fascinating. The fact that Prohibition ended in 1932, I think.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly. So
yeah.
that it wasn't in America. Wow.
But alcoholic posters and that are like. Their, I guess, like their period for the movie, like they're both drinks that did before the war happened, and like I didn't know if there might be continuity errors there, but they're like, they work for the period of the piece, so
yeah, especially given the fact that when it was made in 1963 or when it came out in 63, they filmed it in 1962, that you know they knew to use these particular brands, knowing that there's something that was authentic for the time.
And then my other, I just sort of wanted to talk about James Coburn, since this is the only minute we get of him, the guy who plays Sedgwick.
Yeah.
And I was doing research about other movies I've seen him in, and apparently I've only ever seen him in other mm-hmm. Steve McQueen movies. So, Magnificent the Seven,
Magnificent
and then
Seven.
Hell is for Heroes, which was... Actually, like film, he did that movie right before this one.
Ah, okay.
And then apparently he's also mm-hmm. the El Slizo Cafe owner from the Muppet movie, which I didn't realize. And then I had to go back and watch the scene.
Uh-huh.
And he actually is. And then he's also Mr. Watt from Monsters, Inc. He voices the guy in Monsters, Inc., which I also didn't know. So.
Correct.
I found that was two interesting things I found out, and I think he's probably, besides Yul Brynner, he's probably my favorite cowboy in Magnificent Seven, because he's the knife guy, and I always thought that was super cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I just always thought it was super cool that he used knives, but
like
thinking back
than...
on it now, it's so ineffective.
Queen.
Like for. Yeah. Like. Anyway, so I just wanted to mention those things about him because I don't get to see him the rest of the week.
I mean, he's not much. He's not in the movie much after this either. He has one other scene, and that'll be it. Which
and then I said
2 weeks from now, if I remember correctly. All right, excellent. Do you have anything else to say about?
Yeah, I like the color scheme of the bus. it's really a. That's the only thing I have left, but I did like the colors of it.
Do you think that that's the typical color scheme of buses at the time?
I wouldn't say I'm an authority.
Because it's supposed to be French, so
but,
I wonder if that's the...
Yeah, I could... I mean, it looks like it's genuine to me.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is it says... I mean, we're not, no longer in France. You know, we were in France with Cedric, but now we're back in Germany. You know, and it says that they're actually leaving Schaffhausen.
Okay.
Which I have absolutely no idea where that is. Strafthausen, maybe?
Yeah.
That could be where it is. And some of it's going to Zurich. All right. Excellent. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Oh, that's all I got, I think.
All right. So do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can find me in the Star Wars Minute Listener Society.
Ooh,
if
okay.
You're there. But you can also find me on Instagram at Q_R3K. And you can also look at my design work because I'm a graphic designer at HughKeen.com, which I do not have the URL.
All right, very cool. And obviously, as we mentioned at the beginning, people can actually also go and listen to on the National Treasure Minute, which hopefully is back in full force.
Yeah.
At this point.
Hopefully.
And there you go. All right. While you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can find us on Facebook. Our group is known as The Cooler. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. So, Hugh, you want to come back in tomorrow?
Yeah, I can definitely do that.
All right, excellent. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.